Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hey, welcome into Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan for a special live episode. Go follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan 975. On today's episode, the Astros put the O in O Canada as they get goose egg to close out another series loss. The pitching depth and the margins in the division are paper thin. Are we witnessing the end of the golden era of Houston baseball? We'll discuss. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. You know, look, as I compiled notes together for this episode, the series in Toronto really just echoes a lot of the tired talking points we've harped on for weeks. And what's really frustrating is Houston was just a blown save away from taking this series, but to focus in on a blown save is really to miss, I think, the more important headline here, which is game to game, their offense makes the margin for victory just razor thin. What were your takeaways from this series, Charlie? And I guess the state of the team as they enter into this final 15-game stretch of the season?
It damn sure feels like slip sliding away. Vintage Paul Simon song, happy Googling. But they're just one good homestand from probably making the playoffs. As those scoff, a good homestand. Look, they scored 3-3-0 runs in Toronto. It's a broken record. It's a broken offense. It's a bad offense. This is not a recording. Jose Altuve is a freaking abomination. And Joe Espada keeps riding him in the three spot. Oh, let's demote him to the cleanup spot. He continues to just be flailing away in the batter's box. But you know what? Much worse than his current 2-for-33. That's a batting average of 61. Not 261, not 161, 61, right? The front of this month-long worst everyday player in baseball that Altuve has been, he was 3-for-35. Now he's 2-for-33. But the base running, where he was loafing, dogging, stupid, all of the above, great play by Vladimir Guerrero Jr., only possible because Altuve's trotting. Hey, at least the belated slide almost got him to third base. Altuve continues to not single-handedly do grave damage to this team's playoff hopes. But if we're issuing, you know, triple X goat horns to one player on the roster, at this point, it's Jose Altuve. You don't get lifetime indemnity from criticism for all of the beautiful and glorious things he's done heretofore. Altuve sucks, and he is foremost dragging this team down. But he has plenty of company, pretty much the whole batting order. You know, Jeremy Peña had 3 hits in the game where he returned in Fenway after missing the month with the fractured rib. He's hitting .239 since then. Christian Walker has his surges. Actually, on balance, July and August, he was pretty good. Now he's 7 for his last 44. That's about .170. Jesus Sanchez had that 0-for-27. He goes into Atlanta. Now it's 0-for-13. Hey, not quite halfway to 0-for-27. And his defensive reputation was a little spotty coming here. That guy, instead of an outfielder's glove, looks like he plays with oven mitts half the time. Then you get to the bottom. Don't blame guys like Mauricio Dubon and Taylor Trammell. They're bad offensive players. Always have been, always will be. Carlos Correa, hey, homered the first 2 games of the Toronto series. He's been pretty good the last week. But since his first 9 games when he sizzled upon rejoining the Astros, 28 games since, his OPS is barely .700. And that puts him on the plus side of the curve in this lineup, which is just for hunger. Josh, heading to the Braves series, they're now at 75 times this season scoring 3 or fewer runs. Last year's offense, which was no juggernaut, other than compared to this one, the entire season 67 times scored 3 or fewer. The Astros are at 75, and I'm pretty sure 75 and counting.
And then what they do in this Toronto series, average 2 runs per game over the 3 games. That's not gonna cut it. And the problem is for the season, we've known scoring runs has been a problem. Even when the offense has been in the top 10, they've been kind of middle of the pack in runs scored. guys, they are 25th in runs scored on the season right now. Now, let me give you a little more context for that. Over the last 30 days, they are dead last in runs. They are 28th in batting average and 28th in OPS. I mean, over the last 30 days, they're basically the worst offense in baseball. It's incredible. They have to get this figured out. And Joe Espada talked after the game, and he just said, we got to get more guys involved in the offense. It can't just be one or two guys getting the hits. Correa and Yordan, for the most part, that's what it's been recently. Even Pena, as Charlie mentioned, he's had some good spots, but he hasn't been quite what he was before he got injured. It's everybody. And Charlie mentioned it, Sanchez with the defense. And I mean, if you think you're doing yourself a favor by getting Cam Smith out of the lineup, and then you see some of that start to take place and Sanchez isn't hitting either, I have some big questions. And I saw the comment in here about Javier. Yeah, I didn't think he looked great either. I thought he got better as the game went along. That's what Joe Espada said. He felt like he kind of found his fastball as the game went along, but unfortunately it was over by then. It didn't really matter. Now, he gave you six innings to kind of help out your bullpen, but overall you're going to need a lot more than that. I have a lot more to get to, but finally, I do want to mention, I think we do know what the new five starting rotation should be, right? Your top three, Alexander being the third, and then I think it's going to have to be Javier and Blue Ball for four and five. You know, Garcia looks gone, and we know Arrigetti's gone, and we don't trust McCullers. He came in and gave up runs again in relief, so I think you got to get Blue Ball a shot here.
Look, more than a two-month stretch now, they are 24 and 33. Only the Tampa Bay Rays and the Minnesota Twins as bad in the American League. It's been a really lousy team for more than 2 months. They need the tourniquet that the Mariners came up with in Atlanta over the weekend. And the Mariners go home where they've excelled all season, and they're racking up win after win after win, as are the Texas Rangers. I did X out after Gausman, who was just brilliant. I mean, all right, you might say he shut down a lineup of scrubs. Oh, yeah, Yordan's hit over 400 since he's been back, and this is what the offense is. But as the Astros skulked their way through customs back into the country, it had to be with the knowledge, or at least the feeling, that they're a bad team for more than 2 months now. Can they extricate themselves from this to do enough to eke their way into the playoffs, right? They knew, boarding a plane, the worst they'd be getting to Atlanta was still tied for first place. Of course, they were 11 games ahead of the Rangers a couple of months ago, 7 games ahead of the Mariners a couple of months ago, and here we are now.
Yeah, the problem is Javier was not great, but he gave you 6 innings, and sometimes you have to score more than 4 runs. This team scored 0 runs, so it didn't matter that he gave up 4. He could have given up 1, and that would have been the margin of victory in the finale. You have to be able to score more than 3 runs to win a game, to be a competitive team. Otherwise, you're what this team has been for 2 months. And it's hard to blame any one person because there's just so much blame to go around. Speaking of blame, I've seen a lot of people blaming Dana Brown for the current state of the team in our comments on social media. And we've discussed it on this show that he might have overestimated the depth of the rotation. It clearly seemed like he did by counting too heavily on the returning guys to bolster the rotation. But they have been getting unpredictably good outings from a pitcher and Jason Alexander that most of us had not paid attention to prior to this season. And besides that, obviously McCullers returned as a shell of himself. Arrigetti and Garcia returned, but then fell victim to elbow inflammation alongside Brandon Walter, who was doing well for this team. The flip side is this lineup, because outside of Paredes, this lineup is as healthy as you could have hoped for at this point. We all kept saying prior to this, if they could just be healthy right before the playoffs, just be healthy in time for the playoffs. And yet they're as healthy as you could hope for outside of Paredes. And that side of the ball is still overwhelmingly the acute pain point of this team. So I have two questions for you guys coming out of that. In the big picture, did not getting a pitcher at the deadline really matter? Is that really making the difference? And secondly, how much have the injuries really played a role into this team's downward spiral? Because we've talked about it all season, how, man, just these injuries, but how much is it that versus just not being a productive, well-constructed lineup at the end of the day?
Well, I'll take it first with the, did Dana Brown do enough the trade deadline and acquiring pitching? And we talked about it a lot. They had a ton of guys coming back, and we all kind of agreed the reported compensation for Dylan Cease was a little more than we were comfortable with. And as I look back at Dylan Cease, three of his last five starts, he's failed to pitch five innings. So, you know, if you were hoping adding him was going to be a guy that could help your bullpen and give you more length than what you already have, not the case when he hadn't gone more than five in three of his last five. His ERA, when everybody was kind of talking about, should we go after him? His ERA hasn't been good that this year so far. His ERA was at 4.79. Right now it's at 4.71. It's pretty much exactly the same. So I don't see, and you're supposed to have to give up possibly what Matthews and Arrighetti in this deal. These are just reports. We don't know for sure. Well, now we know Arrighetti's on the shelf, but we didn't know that then. So I think it's kind of hard to come at Dana with this. And he pointed out, he did his set this week on the flagship, and he said, you know, these are competitive guys. When they're feeling good and the meds look good, they want to come back and throw. They want to contribute. They want to throw harder. They want more spin. Like, these are the type of guys you kind of have to back them off a little bit. And maybe they've learned some lessons from this year that maybe you got to protect these guys from themselves a little bit. The big one that we kind of forget about, the Hayden Wesneski thing early in the season, it was so long ago, we forget, but remember he had the elbow soreness, and then they just pushed him back a few days and then had him come out and start again and blew out his elbow. So hopefully they've learned a few things this year, but I don't know if I can put this all on Dana, Brandon, because to your point, while we're talking about this, the offense has not produced up to expectations, and Hader getting hurt, that's not Dana Brown's fault either.
Yeah, a lot that can be added to that. They aggressively sought to upgrade the offense, basically knowing Paredes was done. The long-term ramifications of taking on Correa, the money that they're taking on, I still think is going to be very problematic. But if Paredes hadn't gotten hurt, for those enthused about what Correa has done, well, you wouldn't have had Correa, right? Urias, a better offensive player than Dubon. Here, Sanchez has been a disappointment, but still way better than what Cam Smith's been the last 3 months. And the procession of Trammells and Hummels and Meltons and McCormicks. $20 million. Their return on investment for Christian Walker is minimal. Anyone pointing, well, he's going to finish with 85 runs batted in. You're batting 4-5 in the lineup every day, and you have the most at-bats on the team with runners in scoring position. You're basically going to drive in 85 runs by accident. Walker hasn't been good in the clutch this year. Ditto Altuve, whose stats are even worse than his overall numbers, right? He's barely batting 260 now for the season. Runners in scoring position, Altuve is in the 220s. The two guys with the most opportunities to drive in runs have been dumb and dumber, pretty much. On the pitching side, remember, the Astros were trying to negotiate the CBT line. Jim Crane waved trying to stay below that when the Correa opportunity availed itself. They could say, we have so many guys coming back. Well, at least one of them should be decent and reasonably durable. Oops. I will say, if they learn from the error of their ways and bringing guys back, my God, how freaking slow on the uptake can you be? What's it been, 37 bouts of elbow inflammation? And you can't just snap your fingers and say, we want that guy, we get that guy. You know, for the offense, Shohei Ohtani, Aaron Judge were not available. For the rotation, Jacob DeGrom or Freddie Peralta were not available. Charlie Morton was. The Detroit Tigers didn't pay a premium for him. You know, another B-list starters who you'd say, we expect them to at least go five innings and not get their doors blown off every other start. And the Astros don't have one guy except for total luck. But you know what? For anyone who's going to blast Dana Brown, and he's a big boy, he's a general manager, just like Joe Espada, if you're not going to wear the burden of a failing team to at least an extent, right? Foremost, it's always on the players on the field. Dana Brown's the guy who claimed Jason Alexander off waivers. 32 years old. The guy had done nothing in the major leagues. And even though I know it feels like the Astros season's circling the drain, it's not yet down the drain. It might well be there if not for Jason Alexander. Astros have won his last eight starts, and he's pitched darn well in six of them. Hey, Dana Brown, again, lucky. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. You just add it all up. This has been a bad team for over 2 months. But you're not judged on 2 months. You're judged on 162 games. And if the pass-fail course is ultimately, did you make it to the playoffs for the ninth year in a row? They're still alive. I know to most, it's like, pull the plug. It's a matter of time. Give it through the homestand next week at least.
Yeah, that will be super decisive. You know, one of our commenters said what I think, which is basically it is ultimately on the players to perform. You can't necessarily blame hitting coaches or Dana Brown or Espada. I see a lot of people blame Espada. If someone were raking at the bottom of the lineup that he just refused to move up, that would be one thing. But there's not. No one is raking. No one is justifying being pushed up. Because I guarantee you Espada would bring them up in the lineup. I think you're getting as much as you could hope for out of the pitching staff at this point for who's left. But even if they got Charlie Morton, he would have to pitch a shutout to ensure that he'd get a win. This team can't score unless Charlie Morton's going to grab a bat. I just don't know how this team wins.
And for the lineup, I mean, it's the sorest of thumbs sticking out because he's the most heralded player in Astros history. Jose Altuve, over the last 28 games coming home from Canada, 157 OPS 500. Context, I think anyone who even passively follows baseball knows an OPS of 500 is garbage. Martin Maldonado's worst ever season with the Astros, his OPS was 573. Brad Ausmus, another poster boy of, oh my God, he's awful offensively. His worst ever OPS season with the Astros was 593. Altuve, over a month's worth of play now, OPS of 500. And he's been in the top half of the lineup every game he started. I'm not going to say it's a straight up lack of cojones by Espada. This might be more of an organizational decision. But Victor Caratini would be better in the Astros lineup as a designated hitter than Jose Altuve. Yep. Either Dubon or Urias, much better defensively at second base than Altuve if he is giving you less than nothing, except that's not possible. But Altuve is giving nothing to you offensively. I mean, are you going to go to your grave or to the end of the season? Back of the baseball card. He's due. I'm not totally positive about this because I thought my ears were deceiving me. I happen to be heading home, picking up the start of the Thursday game via DVR. I heard Alex Cintron talking about Altuve swinging the bat well. If he actually said that, he should have been fired before the game actually started. He could not possibly have been that oblivious, so maybe my aging ears, to quote Roger Clemens, misremembered or misheard what he said in the moment. But hitting coaches higher on the organizational flowchart, they're a couple weeks away perhaps from all kinds of decisions to be made from the very, very top, meaning Jim Crane's office, Brandon.
Speaking of Cintron, I saw someone on X sharing a blurb from Correa where he was quoted as saying that when he was, I guess, coming over to the team, that Cintron had reached out to him and said some things that he saw in his swing that he could be working on. And Correa said, where did you hear that from? And Cintron said, oh, I observed it. He goes, well, that's exactly what I'm working on. Those are the things I'm working on. And I guess that was to appeal or maybe in objection to the people who are the Cintron haters, the people who are the Cintron critics. But I didn't take it like that. Cintron identified something that Correa was already working on. So it's not like he like had some epiphany that he gave to Correa that Correa is producing more using. Also, wasn't it Correa that helped Pena get his swing together in the offseason? And like that's who he attributes to his big turnaround? Again, not trying to put any blame acutely on Cintron, but I think it's silly to sit here and be an apologist for anyone on this team right now, considering they just don't produce. So while the players are ultimately culpable for their production, there has to be some blame to go around because otherwise, what are those guys here for? What are their jobs? And it's not to say that Cintron doesn't know what he's talking about. I trust Cintron knows more baseball than I've forgotten in my lifetime. That's not an indication of whether he's good at his job or not. But also having the knowledge, but not being able to influence the players to take a different strategy and philosophy at the plate, that is indicative of a person who's not getting their job done. Again, it's hard to put any blame specifically on any person, but I just wanted to point that out. Now, Josh, you talked about what lessons would they take away from this season. And ultimately, I think the interesting part of that question is, what lessons are Jim Crane taking away from the season? Because he's the one who ultimately the buck stops with him. He's the final decision maker. He decided to open the pocketbook up, to go blow through the tax, to be able to get the help this team needed on offense and this lineup, which ultimately has not worked out. But they have a lot more problems than just that. I mean, obviously, we talked about the pitching coaches. They have drawn the ire of fans all season, fairly or unfairly, but the results are glaring, as are the sad state of the team's ability to keep and get guys healthy on the team. If Houston completes this collapse, which, I mean, they're still in first as we record this, so there is still a high likelihood that this team gets into the playoffs, if not win the division. But if they do complete this collapse and either get bounced early or miss the playoffs entirely, what's the likelihood we're going to see deep wholesale changes internally at the end of the season?
I think it was Lee Majors who played the Fall Guy back in the 80s. He's a stuntman. Jim Crane's going to roll a couple of heads if it ultimately came to that. If for no other reason, they'd have a big marketing problem going into 2026. If they went from American League Championship Series 2023, losing all four home games, the Texas Rangers, who then go in the World Series. 2024, okay, you win another division title and get dusted in two by the Detroit Tigers. 2025, you don't even make it, and you blow it. I'm not going to say choke, because are you choking if you're just not that good? Astros attendance was down 200,000 last year from 2023. It's going to be down another 100,000 plus this year from 2024. If you're not making some notable change with your front-facing personnel, what are you going to sell? Hey, Altuve's only 704 hits away from 3,000. Come count down with us as he makes $100 million over the next 4 years of his contract. Remember, their payroll, they have issues. Unless Jim Crane reaches a comfort zone, which I'm not saying he owes this to anybody, but, you know, his heirs will be okay if he decides we can afford $10 million in tax next year, right? They'd be a third-time repeater, 50% penalty on anything over the tax threshold. Right? They're going to be relatively close, within $15 million or so of the first tax threshold next year, not even counting Framber Valdez or some hopeful reasonable facsimile who you're not going to get for $1.98 to join a rotation, which for 2026 at this point is Hunter Brown and So, yeah, if they miss the playoffs, there will be fall guys, plural, scapegoats, whatever you want to call them. Whether either would be the manager or the general manager, or who would be in more trouble, I don't know. Josh, you care to hazard a guess?
I mean, we're talking about Jim Crane here. Like, what would he do should they miss the playoffs? I mean, I get the point. Because if I'm
the guy who won the World Series.
Yeah, and I'm like, I gave you what you wanted. I went and got you Correa back. I went and got you that left-handed hitter you need. You could say it's a Dana Brown, but it's Jim Crane's team, right? You get my point. It's like, I opened up the checkbook, made a big commitment to Correa, it looks like, for another 3 years. Paredes is still on the roster. Pena's still on the roster. Jim Crane knowing, like, yeah, we kind of have some roster movement to do in the offseason. I don't know if we can keep all these guys, but it was worth it to go in for this season. Part of me wonders, based on what Charlie just said, with what their salary looks like next year, I wonder if they did all their shopping for 2026 at the trade deadline this year when they got Correa. I'm starting to wonder that. I'm wondering if it's going to just be like patchwork guys behind Hunter Brown. We all expect them to let Fromber walk. But the problem is, so many of these guys are coming back from Tommy John surgery that are hurt this year. How can you count on any of them for 2026?
I agree with that. Final thoughts before we're out the door?
It said the sky is darkest before the dawn. Some sayings are just stupid. It feels like the Astros are bottoming out toward flaming out entirely, but I will stick to things can change for no apparent reason. Atlanta Braves are playing out the string. So, of course, the Astros in the Friday night opener get to face a guy whose ERA is 1.33 since being called up a month and a half ago. Hey, they won't face Chris Sale in the Braves series. Hunter Brown should go in the game Friday night. Apparently, they were dickering between Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. By not having Brown go Thursday in Toronto, that eliminated the possibility of Brown pitching against both the Rangers and the Mariners, unless they were to bring him back on 3 days rest in the Seattle series, which would be a complete and stupid act of desperation. So Hunter Brown Friday, then do you have him come back Wednesday against the Rangers, or do you want to hold him Friday for the Mariners? Well, the Astros might be fighting for their lives against the Rangers just as much as they are against the Mariners. The Rangers are at the Mets this weekend. Talking about teams fading toward missing the playoffs completely. Yep. The Mariners, meanwhile, are at home. Four-game series with the Angels. Then they go to fading Kansas City before coming to Daikin Park next weekend. If the Astros avoid getting swept in Atlanta, I know that's not, charge of the light brigade stuff. Win one out of three. They take two out of three from the Rangers, two out of three from the Mariners. Then they'll be in. Yeah, they're still probably going to make the playoffs position before a very perilous, watching this team on the road, final trip to Sacramento, three with the A's, and then three in Anaheim with the Angels.
Charlie mentioned Caratini earlier, and I think with Joe Espada in the lineup, you got to play the guys that they're hitting the best right now. And as I look at it, this is a pretty good sample size. Last 30 days, you only have four guys that are hitting 267 or above. Two of them are catchers for your team, and Yiner and Caratini. The other one's Correa, and you guessed it, Yordan. But if you're not a big batting average guy, you only have technically three, but four guys with an OPS over 700 with Diaz, Correa, Walker, and I'm throwing Yordan in, but he hasn't played the full 30 days. But you get my point. So as OPS, batting average, they only have a few guys that are even just decent options right now. Joe Espada is right. The other guys in the lineup have to pick it up. I'm not saying Taylor Trammell like Charlie is, but like Jesus Sanchez, play better. Christian Walker, play better. These are the guys that need to get it going. And even Dubon, at least he's good for like a little hot streak every now and then. And I know Altuve is the elephant in the room, but I think we all think he'll eventually come around. And that's why I'm with Charlie here. I don't think this is the end of it. They've been playing this bad for a while. They could easily turn it around and start playing well for a streak too. So I think we just have to be patient and see what happens in Atlanta.
Yeah, I agree with that. And first, while there's a lot of blame to go around and we've covered much of it here, one group not to blame is our viewers. Thank you so much for hanging with us and continuing to view these videos and consumer episodes, even while the team has been spiraling. I'm going to dovetail off of what you said, Josh, which is last episode, I cautioned against panic, but there is a difference between panic and accepting reality. And the reality is this team, even when they were winning at a higher clip, were not a great offensive team. And it shouldn't surprise anyone if this team had one final push in them and recaptured the magic of old, considering we talk about the culture of winning on this team. But to accept reality is to own that this team seemingly doesn't have the pitching depth to win in the same style that they did in the first half of the season. The window isn't closed yet, but series by series looks heavier with more downward trajectory with each runner left on base and scoring position. And given what we've seen to this point and whatever the results are down the final stretch, Houston could face its most unpredictable offseason in years. So one last reminder before out the door, like I said, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to hit like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts on apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend and go Stros.
And that's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.